Morning, everyone. It's good to be with you all this morning. Good to gather together here, as God's people, lift up worship unto Him, and now study a little bit from His Word that He's given to us. Appreciate that last song, David. Fruit of the Spirit. We're going to be talking about one of those fruits of the Spirit this morning, the fruit of gentleness. We're going to do so looking at the person Moses and studying a lesson that we're going to jump right into here called the meekness of Moses. Just to begin, we're going to quickly look at Numbers chapter 12 and verse 3. We won't spend a lot of time in Numbers at the beginning of the lesson, but just look at this one verse together as we begin our time together this morning. Numbers 12:3 says, "Now the man Moses was very meek, more than all people who are on the face of the earth." This is quite an impressive statement. Moses here is not just described as being very meek, but he's described as being the meekest person on the face of the earth. And when I read a verse like this, it tells me that if I want to learn something about meekness, that I should look to the life of Moses. Surely, if God is recognizing him here as having this quality more than anyone else on the earth at this time, and there were many people on the earth, then God wants us to learn from him. And that's what we're going to do this morning together. We're going to examine some things from the life of Moses to learn lessons about meekness. First off, let's spend a moment to define the characteristic that we're talking about. Meekness is not a word that we use often in our normal conversation, and I think sometimes we don't understand it all that well. But in addition to the word meek or meekness, we also want to consider the Hebrew word that's used in our passage from Numbers, where Moses was called very meek. In some translations, such as the New King James or New American Standard, will say he was very humble. In the English language, meek and humble are two different concepts. And meek is defined as quiet, gentle, and easily imposed upon or submissive. Many places in the Old Testament, this word from Numbers 12 is translated afflicted. A person that is meek is gentle. Gentle to the point that they would rather be afflicted, imposed upon, mistreated even, instead of responding harshly or roughly or aggressively. Humble, on the other hand, is a concept that pertains more to what a person thinks of himself rather than what they do. But as with most attitudes that we carry, the way that we act reveals what's within our heart. So which of these two words is the better translation to describe here the character of Moses? I'm not sure that we can precisely say, but this morning we're going to focus on that concept of meekness, and we're going to look at its primary meaning, which is gentleness. And I think we can see through Scripture that Moses had this quality, it was a quality that was very important to God. Because meekness is something that we are all called to obtain. In the Beatitudes, Jesus makes the statement in Matthew 5:5, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." In this beatitude, Jesus repeats a thought that's expressed in Psalm 37:11. In 1 Peter, women who are especially told how important this characteristic is, in 1 Peter 3:3-4, "Do not let your adorning be external, the braiding of hair and the putting on of gold, jewelry, or the clothing you wear, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious." Elsewhere, other forms of this word are used. Gentleness, as we've already said, is a fruit of the Spirit found in Galatians 5. It is a fundamental characteristic that reflects that we have been taught by the Spirit and have the humility to do God's will. In Galatians 6:1, we are to restore the one caught in a transgression with gentleness. In Ephesians 4:2, we are told that walking with all humility and gentleness is part of how we walk worthy of our calling. In Colossians 3:12, we are told that as God's chosen ones, we are to put on meekness. In James 1:21, we are told to receive with meekness the implanted word. In James 3:13, we are told to show our works in the meekness of wisdom. You see, failing to show meekness shows we do not have wisdom, that we are being foolish. We are told multiple places that when we deal with those that oppose us, to do so with gentleness. 1 Peter 2:25 and 1 Peter 3:15. Needless to say, we could do an in-depth study of the concept of meekness or gentleness purely from the New Testament. And we will revisit just a couple of these verses throughout the lesson. But this morning, we're going to examine meekness by simply looking at the life of Moses, who in his day was the meekest man on the earth. And I'm not going to attempt to summarize the life of Moses this morning, but instead I'm going to let Stephen do it from the book of Acts, chapter 7, in his speech. The Holy Spirit, speaking through Stephen, does an excellent job of kind of summarizing the life of Moses. We're going to read through that, and this is a bit of a lengthy reading, but we're going to read Acts chapter 7, beginning in verse 17, and I think we'll stop about verse 38. Read with me, if you would, Acts chapter 7, beginning in verse 17. But as the time of promise drew near, which God had granted to Abraham, the people increased and multiplied in Egypt, until there arose over Egypt another king who did not know Joseph. He dealt shrewdly with our race and forced our fathers to expose their infants so that they would not be kept alive. At this time, Moses was born. And he was beautiful in God's sight, and he was brought up for 3 months in his father's house. And when he was exposed, Pharaoh's daughter adopted him and brought him up as her own son. And Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was mighty in his words and deeds. When he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brothers, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them being wronged, he defended the oppressed man and avenged him by striking down the Egyptian. He supposed that his brothers would understand that God was giving them salvation by his hand, but they did not understand. And on the following day, he appeared to them as they were quarreling and tried to reconcile them, saying, "Men, you are brothers. Why do you wrong each other?" But the man who was wronging his neighbor thrust him aside, saying, "Who made you a ruler and a judge over us? Do you want to kill me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday?" At this retort, Moses fled and became an exile in the land of Midian, where he became the father of two sons. Now when 40 years had passed, an angel appeared to him in the wilderness of Mount Sinai, and a flame of fire in a bush. When Moses saw it, he was amazed at the sight, and as he drew near to look, there came the voice of the Lord, "I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham and of Isaac and of Jacob." And Moses trembled and did not dare to look. Then the Lord said to him, "Take off the sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their groaning, and I have come down to deliver them. And now come, I will send you to Egypt." This Moses, whom they rejected, saying, "Who made you a ruler and a judge?" This man God sent as both ruler and redeemer by the hand of the angel who appeared to him in the burning bush. This man led them out, performing wonders and signs in Egypt and at the Red Sea and in the wilderness for 40 years. This is the Moses who said to the Israelites, "God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brothers." This is the one who was in the congregation in the wilderness with the angel who spoke to him at Mount Sinai, and with our fathers he received living oracles to give to us. We'll go ahead and stop there. Hopefully that this reading, you know, a bit lengthy, but it reminds us in summary form of the life of Moses and some of the key events in it that we're familiar with and brings those fresh to our mind. So here we are as we take a look at this summary. We're looking at the life of Moses, and we're trying to find examples of meekness or of gentleness. Yet, as we read this summary, one of the first things we see is found in chapter 7, verses 23 and 24 of what we just read, where we read, "When he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brothers, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them wronged, he defended the oppressed man and avenged him by striking down the Egyptian." This is pretty much the opposite of gentleness. Maybe if we go back and we read the original account, this event might be cast in a little better light. So let's turn back now to Exodus chapter 2. We'll be done in the book of Acts. We're going to spend most of our time back in the Old Testament for the rest of the study this morning. We're going to look at Exodus 2, verses 11 and 12, to see the original account that Stephen is talking about. Exodus 2, 11 and 12, we read, "One day when Moses had grown up, he went out to his people and looked on their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. He looked this way and that, and seeing no one, he struck down the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Well, this account actually makes it sound even worse, because we see Moses hide the Egyptian in the sand and try to make sure that he's going to get away with this act. And in just a moment, we're going to get to the meekness of Moses. But first, let's observe in this situation, Moses acted with harshness. And then let's notice what happens next in this account. The next three verses of Exodus 2 say, "When he went out the next day, behold, two Hebrews were struggling together, and he said to the man in the wrong, 'Why do you strike your companion?' He answered, 'Who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?' Then Moses was afraid and thought, 'Surely the thing is known.' When Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well." Moses' fellow Israelites noticed his harsh actions the day before. Moses both thought that he had gotten away with this act of murder, and also that his brothers would understand why he did it, that he had done it for what he considered a noble reason, to deliver them. Yet, he did not get away with it, and his brothers did not understand why he had done it. Instead, they characterized him as a harsh person. Moses, by acting harshly, had damaged his reputation. There was no hope of having the influence that he would need to deliver his people from bondage. We're going to examine a little more about this mistake in Moses' life and why he made it in a later point. But here, just notice the consequences. He acted harshly and lost this opportunity to deliver his people, and lost everything that he knew in life, being forced to flee to a foreign land to not be killed by Pharaoh. If you think about it, gentleness is not something that we have a lot of opportunities to demonstrate. There are few people who go around on a daily basis acting harshly. Sure, those people do exist, and if we constantly fly off the handle, we definitely need to work on that. But most people do not have a struggle with acting gently in normal, low-stress situations. It is often when we are provoked or tested or put into a difficult situation that the temptation to respond harshly is the strongest. Moses felt it here when he saw an injustice, a sin being committed. In the New Testament, special calls are made for gentleness in situations where someone is caught in sin and needs restoration. If we are a spiritual person and see someone caught in the struggle of sin, this is when we need to be reminded of the importance of gentleness. If someone challenges our faith, we are called to make a defense. But though our first reaction may be to respond aggressively, we are instructed to do so with gentleness and respect. If we have someone who opposes us, maybe even with hate and vitriol, we are called in 2 Timothy 2:24 through 26 to correct them with gentleness. If we fail to act gently, we give up the chance that they may come to their senses and repent. We lose our influence over them. Harshness may be demonstrated with loud words, but it can also be demonstrated with harsh actions. A person can be very soft-spoken but still lack gentleness. Moses, as we will see, had to spend 40 years away from his people after committing his harsh act of anger with the Egyptian. This reminds us that sin can have consequences that we cannot control, but also that when we fail to exercise gentleness, we can greatly damage our influence on those we need and desire to help. It is in these difficult situations that people will notice how we handle ourselves. So let us learn a lesson from the actions of Moses and realize that harshness affects our influence. So we have learned a lesson about the effects of harshness. But that wasn't exactly what we expect to learn looking at Moses, the man that's called the meekest on the face of the earth. Moses is 40 years old when he murdered the Egyptian. He flees Egypt, and he comes to the land of Midian. One of the very first things Moses does in this land is become a deliverer. The priest of Midian had 7 daughters who came to a well to water their father's flock. But the shepherds came and drove them away. Moses once again sees that he has an obligation to intervene, and the text says in Exodus 2:17 that he stood up and saved them and watered their flock. Moses obviously feels like his role is to be a deliverer, but as he demonstrated with his murder of the Egyptian, he has a few things to learn about how to truly be a deliverer for his people. Because of Moses' kindness to these women, he has given one of them as a wife, a woman named Zipporah. In Exodus 3, we see the account of Moses in the burning bush. Stephen told us a bit ago that 40 years passed between Moses fleeing Egypt and encountering the burning bush. Before these 40 years, Moses was raised in a life of luxury in the house of Pharaoh. Life would have been easy. He had access to the treasures of Egypt. While this life had its advantages, it did not allow him to learn the things that he needed to be qualified to deliver his people. He may have had the desire to deliver them at age 40, but he was not ready. We've already learned some of the things about what happened during those 40 years where Moses was away from his people, sojourning in a foreign land. He was building character during those 40 years. We're told in Hebrews 11 that he endured this time away from his people as seeing him who is invisible. Just being apart from his people and perhaps learning from his mistake with the Egyptian would have helped him learn gentleness. We also know that he became a husband. Being a husband is a great learning experience. Women are called the weaker vessel, and there's a certain way that husbands must interact with their wives to have a healthy relationship. There's a level of tenderness and quietness and temperance that most women respond to the best. Elders are called to be the husband of one wife, not as an arbitrary requirement, but because there are character traits that are refined by fulfilling the role of husband. Gentleness is one of these things that is learned. Also, during his 40 years away from Egypt, Moses became a father to two sons, Gershom and Eliezer. Certainly, Moses learned to become a meek man through raising these children. Perhaps more than anything else, parenthood challenges our gentleness. Especially in their younger years, children need to be dealt with not predominantly with force or strength, but restraint and tenderness. They are fragile. As parents, we may be tempted to yell and raise our voice to make a point, but often because we let our anger, or even just our concern for them, get out of control, we have lost our effectiveness. Sure, they may stop what they are doing, but they also will remember the harshness that we use to make them stop it. We may fail to see that our children are learning about our character more than they are learning about the thing that we're trying to teach them. It is always important for us to clearly explain what our children have done wrong when we discipline them. Especially with younger children, it may take some time before they can understand what they have said or done to deserve their punishment. And in such cases, gentleness is very important. As a fairly new parent, I am relearning these lessons regularly, and I know that the years ahead are going to continue to teach me to better handle situations involving correction and discipline. I know I have a lot to learn. Fathers especially are instructed in Ephesians 6:4 and Colossians 3:21. They're given these instructions. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And then, fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. I don't want to oversimplify what is talked about when we are told not to provoke our children, but certainly harshness is one way that we can provoke our children. Again, one of the reasons elders are required to have children is so that they can learn things, one of them being gentleness. Not only did Moses have to care for his children, we are told in Exodus 3:1 that he became a shepherd, tending to his father-in-law's flock. Just like parenting can teach lessons in gentleness, so can shepherding. Most of us have heard lessons detailing the job of a shepherd, the challenges with tending helpless and sometimes stubborn animals like sheep, especially since the Bible uses this illustration so often. Moses spent 40 years in Egypt not just passing time. He was learning by becoming a husband, a father, and a shepherd. He was becoming a different man than the one who wanted to help his people in Exodus 2, but lacked the restraint and meekness to do so effectively. When Moses came out of the wilderness and God called him to come back to Egypt to deliver his people, he possessed such meekness that God calls him the meekest man on the face of the earth. You see, meekness is not just something that we have or we do not have. We cannot get away with the excuse that we are just a gruff person or just a blunt person. One of the things that I really appreciate about this church is that there seem to be a lot of people here who are not easily offended when it comes to hearing the truth. We want to be right, and if there is something that needs to be discussed, we do not shy away from it. We confront it openly. Obviously, this is a generalization, but something that I believe I've seen since I've been a part of you. And while I really appreciate this quality, and I can't overstate how important this quality is, it also comes with a caution. A caution that while many of us may not be easily offended and have thick skin and just care about finding the truth, there are many others who may not be there yet, whether within this congregation or outside. And we must recognize that and realize that we all may need to grow a little in gentleness and having gracious speech, even if that does not come naturally for us. Moses teaches us that meekness is something that can be learned, that we can be trained in, and that should be pursued in our lives. So let's move on in our lesson to the next lesson about meekness. We're going to look at some of the conversation that transpired before the burning bush in Exodus chapter 4 in a moment. But first, let's consider something that happens a little bit later in Exodus chapter 4. God tells Moses to go back to Egypt, and Moses gets permission from his father-in-law to go. So Moses takes his wife and his two sons and starts towards Egypt. And then we read a very bizarre account beginning in Exodus 4, verse 24. Exodus 4, beginning in verse 24, we read, "Now it came about at the lodging place on the way that the Lord met him and sought to put him to death. Then Zipporah took a flint and cut off her son's foreskin and threw it at Moses' feet and said, 'You are indeed a bridegroom of blood to me.' So he let him alone. At that time she said, 'You are a bridegroom of blood because of the circumcision.'" It is one thing to picture an impromptu circumcision taking place in the middle of a journey, but then once foreskin starts to get airborne, you know it was a very strange day, and this is a strange account that we're reading about. And I'm not able to explain all of the things that happened in this account, but what I can explain is that Moses had done something to displease God, because we know that God does not arbitrarily punish people for no reason. In Genesis, God made a covenant with Abraham regarding circumcision. Just quickly, we see in Genesis 17:10, this is God talking to Moses, or talking to Abraham rather, saying, "This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your offspring after you. Every male among you shall be circumcised." Maybe this was something that Moses knew because it has been passed down through the generations. Maybe this was something that God had asked Moses to do when he was before the burning bush. We do not know, but we do know that Moses must have known this was supposed to be done, yet he failed to do it. Knowing this, though, why did Moses fail to follow this command of God? Again, we don't really know from the text, but I'll propose a possible explanation. Remember that Zipporah, Moses' wife, was not an Israelite. She was probably not familiar with the custom of circumcision, and even further, she may have not felt bound to it. What mother would want to unnecessarily perform a surgical procedure on her precious baby boy? It seems likely that her and Moses had spoken of it, and the decision was made to not circumcise the boy. Why might Zipporah have won the argument? Remember that Moses has developed this character of meekness, of gentleness, of submissiveness. Did he perhaps submit to his wife's will instead of asserting God's? Again, we don't know, but if this is what happened, then there's definitely a lesson there for us. Meekness is a very important quality for us, but that is never an excuse to neglect God's commands. It is one thing for us to be submissive and be willing to be afflicted for the sake of God or others, not being self-willed. It is another thing entirely to be weak and passive when it comes to speaking for what is right. Especially as the head of a household, standing for the truth always comes before submission. As husbands and fathers, we need to strive to have meek, yielding, humble spirits. But we can never neglect to boldly echo the words of Joshua we looked at last week. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Sometimes husbands need to stand up to their wives and say, no, we are doing this God's way. When wives are called to submit to their husbands, they are told to do so as is fitting in the Lord or as to the Lord. Wives should stop submitting if to submit ever means compromising God's commands. We can never use meekness as an excuse for failure to follow God. The next thing that we're going to consider is that meekness lets God talk or to speak. Let's go back to Numbers chapter 12, where the verse we began with this morning is taken. Let's read the context surrounding it. Numbers chapter 12, we're going to read the first 9 verses together. Numbers chapter 12, beginning in verse 1. Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. And they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also? And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very meek, more than all people who were on the face of the earth. And suddenly the Lord said to Moses and to Aaron and Miriam, come out, you three, to the tent of meeting. And the three of them came out. And the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud and stood at the entrance of the tent and called Aaron and Miriam. And they both came forward. And he said, hear my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak with him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. With him I speak mouth to mouth, clearly, and not in riddles. And he beholds the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. We see here Miriam and Aaron, Moses' brother and sister, speaking against Moses. He had married a Cushite woman. We don't know if this was in reference to Zipporah, who we have read about, or if it was another woman. Most likely, Zipporah had died and he had remarried, but we don't know that for sure. Regardless, Moses' siblings take exception with an action that he took, and as so often happens, they look for a cause to make his life difficult. Because of a disagreement over this decision, they take an indirect path to speak against him by arguing that they should be given a more prominent position and duty in the budding nation of Israel. They tear down Moses in order to make themselves seem more important. Instead of encouraging him, they are belittling him. This would be the time most of us would speak up and defend ourselves. We know there is value in a good name, and we often eagerly and vigorously try to defend that name against falsehoods or even truths that cast us in a bad light. Usually what happens is when we respond to words spoken against us, we respond with something far short of gentleness. But we do not hear Moses speak a word in his defense. Instead, we're told two things. One, we are informed that he was very meek, the meekest man on the face of the earth. Why tell us that right here? Because it explains why we do not see him speak up. In this situation, a meek man says nothing. And the reason he says nothing is the second thing that we see. Verse 2 says, and the Lord heard it. God hears when we are being undermined and even slandered, and he hears when Moses is being spoken against. And then the Lord speaks on Moses' behalf. He tells Miriam and Aaron very plainly that Moses is the chosen one, that he is the leader chosen by God. Moses is the one who is faithful. He tells them essentially that they should be afraid of speaking against such a man. The story continues with God temporarily making Miriam a leper. The meekness of Moses caused him to let God do the talking. Psalm 37:7 tells us, be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Fret not yourself over the one who prospers in his way, over the man who carries out evil devices. Moses was the chosen leader of Israel, yet he let God do the talking. He was meek and gentle. In our world today, is meek and gentle what people look for in a leader? In our recent presidential primaries, We had some that would be considered meek. How did they fare? Are the presidential candidates meek and gentle? Of course not. Yet God shows that the leader he has chosen for Israel is. And when it comes time to make a defense, God will do the talking. And we can learn a lot from that. Not that we cannot defend ourselves, but we need to be patient. Sometimes we are simply not in a position to defend ourselves. Maybe because we cannot do so in a gentle way because of our anger, or maybe because our defense makes us seem self-absorbed or petty. Oftentimes, the best thing we can do is wait, and the Lord will speak. Maybe not the way that he spoke to Miriam and Aaron here, but maybe in other ways. There may be a brother or sister in Christ who has been listening and decides it is time to stand up for you. Maybe something happens in the lives of others that makes them realize they need to apologize. And without you saying a word, the situation resolves itself. Yes, we can defend ourselves, but ultimately, meekness always allows God to speak. In the incident with the Egyptian, Moses sought to deliver his people, but he went about it the wrong way. He did so not with meekness, but with violence. He used the wrong instrument. We're not told what he used to strike down the Egyptian, whether he did it with his bare hands or used some weapon that was nearby. Moses was no lightweight. Stephen told us in Acts 7:22 that he was mighty in his words and deeds. Moses had been instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. Perhaps this instruction included training in combat. Moses became a mighty man, not some weakling. Moses would come to learn, though, that it was not his might or the wisdom of the Egyptians he needed to deliver his people, but the wisdom of God. Moses somehow knew that God's purpose for him was to deliver his people from their bondage. But in his actions with the Egyptian, he revealed a lack of humility and a lack of trust in God. He took it upon himself, perhaps literally put their deliverance in his own hands, and failed miserably. He told himself, "I can do this. I was born for this." And then he went to work. But he was missing something very important. He had not invited God to be with him. He had not sought God's ways, but moved forward based on his own wisdom, based on human wisdom. As we have seen, Moses learned from that mistake. He spends 40 years away from Egypt, and then in Exodus 3, he sees an angel in a flame of fire in a bush. And then the voice of the Lord came to him. Moses gets to have a conversation with God. In this exchange, we see Moses lacking confidence to be able to do the things God wants him to do. We see in Exodus 4 that Moses does not think that his people will believe that God has chosen him to deliver them. God answers Moses and gives him an instrument to use instead of his own might. Exodus 4, first five verses, we read about that instrument. "Then Moses answered, 'But behold, they will not believe me or listen to my voice, for they will say, the Lord did not appear to you.' The Lord said to him, 'What is that in your hand?' He said, 'A staff.' And he said, 'Throw it on the ground.' So he threw it on the ground, and it became a serpent, and Moses ran from it. But the Lord said to Moses, 'Put out your hand and catch it by the tail.' So he put out his hand and caught it, and it became a staff in his hand, that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you." Recall that Moses had become a shepherd, tending to the flock of his father-in-law Jethro. He had in his hand a rod or a staff that he would have used for many purposes when caring for his sheep, such as guarding them from predators and guiding them where to go. As a side note, I'll point out that some shepherds would have had one instrument for protection, a rod, and another for guidance, a staff, but the Hebrew language generally does not make a distinction between these. Some translations will use the word staff or shepherd staff, and others will use the word rod here. God often uses symbolism and physical reminders of spiritual things. Here he uses this staff as a symbol that he is with Moses. Moses is going to do a great many things, leading the people out of Egypt, convincing Pharaoh to let them go, leading them in battle, but he is not going to do any of those things with harshness or aggression or self-assertiveness. Instead, he is going to have God with him. He is going to move in line with the will of God and in a way that will let God do the work. Down in verse 20, we read, "So Moses took his wife and his sons and had them ride on a donkey and went back to the land of Egypt. Moses took the staff of God in his hand." Moses took the staff of God in his hand. Now Moses could deliver his people the right way, not with rash impulse and murder, but with the blessing and power of God Almighty. Moses could be the meekest man in the world and also be an effective leader of God's people because the power rested in God and not in him. Theodore Roosevelt famously said, "Speak softly and carry a big stick. You will go far." In international affairs, this saying implied peace through strength, that if other nations knew that you had a strong military, you did not have to go around making threats because your strength was well known. Moses could speak softly, he could act gently, and boy, did he carry a big stick. He carried the staff of God, a symbol of the unlimited power of the one true God. He learned that he could let God do the speaking, and as a leader, he told his people the same thing. As the Israelites come up against the Red Sea, we read a passage that we looked at last week. Exodus 14, beginning in verse 13. "And Moses said to the people, 'Fear not, stand firm, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. The Lord will fight for you, and you have only to be silent.'" The Lord said to Moses, "Why do you cry to me? Tell the people of Israel to go forward, lift up your staff, and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, that the people of Israel may go through the sea on dry ground." He was meek, gentle, humble. He put all of the emphasis on God and things God would do. He told them all they had to do was be silent. They just had to trust God. So often, when we lack meekness in our dealings with others, it is because we do not fully trust God. We think it is up to us to make sure that they get the message. We may raise our voice, we may choose harsh words, we may be heavy-handed with punishment, all with the mindset that we just want someone to do the right thing. Our motives may be pure. We want people to be delivered out of sin and into the kingdom of heaven. Most often, it is people that we love that we see making mistakes where we are confronted with this. We so desperately want them to make the right choices that sometimes we feel it is our responsibility to knock some sense into them. When we choose harshness over gentleness, however, what we're actually saying is that we do not trust that God will bring them understanding, so we will take it into our own hands. We think like Moses thought with the Egyptian. We should learn, however, to realize that we have only to be silent in comparison to what God can do and will do. We just have to speak the words of God in a gentle and tender way. God will take it from there. You see, meekness trusts God. It lets God do the work. It puts us and our abilities in the background and brings God's to the front. In Exodus 17, Moses uses the staff of God to bring water out of the rock. God had Moses do this in response to the people questioning whether God was really with them. The staff showed that he was. Then the Amalekites come and war with Israel. And as long as Moses has his arms raised and the staff of God in his hand, the Israelites will prevail. Exodus 17, verse 9. "So Moses said to Joshua, 'Choose for us men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand.'" Let us learn to trust God more. Life may bring us situations where we are tempted to act with roughness. We may convince ourselves that we are justified in doing so. We may convince ourselves there is no other way. We may feel like we have been patient long enough. I have been on both sides of this. I have seen the examples of gentleness done right in very tough situations. I've seen it fall short. I've heard the stories of others that have been restored with gentleness and heard the sentiment that if they had not been restored this way, then they probably would not have been restored at all. I've also had to apologize for using stronger words than were needed, a feeling like they were needed to get the point across. Even if that point was necessary and very important scripturally, but is not seasoned with salt, is not nearly as effective. We need to trust God to do the work. When you think of Moses, probably one of the first things you think about is a mistake that he made. And I'm not talking about the murder of the Egyptian that we've talked about. I'm talking about a mistake involving the staff of God and a time when he acted with anger and impatience rather than meekness, where he did not trust God but let pride enter the picture. It's another occasion where he brought water out of a rock in Numbers chapter 20. Numbers chapter 20, verses 7 through 12. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Take the staff and assemble the congregation, you and Aaron and Aaron your brother, and tell the rock before their eyes to yield its water. So you shall bring water out of the rock for them and give drink to the congregation and their cattle." And Moses took the staff from before the Lord as he commanded him. Then Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, shall we bring water for you out of this rock?" And Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock with his staff twice. And water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their livestock. And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not believe in me to uphold me as holy in the eyes of the people of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given them." There are several lessons in this account that we can learn. We notice that Moses and Aaron did not follow the details of the command they were given. We also notice that Moses was angry when he says, "Hear now, you rebels." He also did not give credit to God, but brings attention to himself, saying, "Shall we bring water for you out of this rock?" This account is commented on in Psalm 106, verses 32 and 33. "They angered him at the waters of Meribah, and it went ill with Moses on their account, for they made his spirit bitter, and he spoke rashly with his lips." Moses got frustrated, and, just like he did with the Egyptian, he wanted to make a statement his own way. Surely he felt justified in speaking harshly to such a stiff-necked people, but he was not. God points out the flaws in what he did in detail. He says, first, "Because you did not believe in me." Meekness trusts God, but Moses' harsh words showed disbelief, and so did his disobedience. By not trusting in God, Moses also set an example for the congregation. His words and actions did not uphold God as holy in the eyes of the people. Moses brought attention to himself and not to God. The people needed to know that it was God who was providing for their needs, not Moses. It is unfortunate that this is often one of the main things about Moses that we remember, but it goes to show how important acting with meekness is. And while we remember his mistakes, as we have seen, there are many good examples of meekness to be found in the life of Moses. Through Moses, we can see meekness in action. We can see a man who learned that reacting harshly and violently does not go unnoticed and can have life-changing consequences. We can see that it is possible for a person to learn meekness as they go through life and live its experiences. We can see that while meekness is very important to God, it can never be an excuse for neglecting his will. We can be meek and still stand firmly for the truth. We can see that meekness allows God to do the talking, yielding to his ability to speak instead of asserting ours. We can also see that meekness allows God to work, not looking to accomplish things with our own two hands, but with the metaphoric staff of God. Gentleness is something that we have to get right. We cannot make excuses for not acting and speaking with meekness. We can never rationalize acting harshly. I recently read something that I suspect is not an isolated idea. In this book I was reading, there is a man who is upset with the way that he was treated by someone while he was trying to come back to the Lord after falling away. He responds by acting very ungently and then proceeds to say to the readers of the book, nobly, that his behavior was sinful. But then, in the same sentence, he rationalizes his actions by saying, "However, sometimes people need a jolt." The idea that angry, harsh words can replace gentleness in order to give people a jolt is, I believe, simply an unscriptural idea. And while sometimes a jolt does a person good, we must let God be in charge of that and not take it upon ourselves. That is something we need to be reminded of often, that I need to be reminded of often. As we close, I just want to read a definition for biblical meekness that I found in the Enhanced Strong's lexicon. And it reads, "Meekness toward God is that disposition of spirit in which we accept His dealings with us as good, and therefore without disputing or resisting. In the Old Testament, the meek are those wholly relying on God rather than their own strength to defend against injustice. Thus, meekness toward evil people means knowing God is permitting the injuries they inflict, and He is using them to purify His elect, and that He will deliver His elect in His time. Gentleness or meekness is the opposite of self-assertiveness and self-interest. It stems from trust in God's goodness and control over the situation. The gentle person is not occupied with self at all. This is a work of the Holy Spirit, not of the human will." I like that definition because it summarizes a lot of what we've been talking about this morning. We see these things in the life of Moses. God recognized the meekness of Moses enough that He wanted us to learn about meekness by looking at his life. Before we end our time this morning, we want to make a special appeal to those that may have a spiritual need. It may be that you've never become a Christian, or you may have some sin in your life that you need help and accountability to overcome, or you may simply need the prayers of this congregation to help you in some way in your spiritual walk. As with any godly quality, the ultimate example of meekness resided in Jesus Christ. David quoted Isaiah 53, talk about Jesus being, he was afflicted and oppressed, but he opened not his mouth. He spoke of himself, saying in Matthew 11:29, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." If you have never taken on the responsibility of being a Christian, know that Jesus will not be harsh with you. He is loving, He is gentle, He is kind, but He is also truth and stands for justice, and He cannot simply overlook our rebellion from Him without us coming to Him. We have to come to Him and learn from Him. We invite you to come to Him and be buried in baptism this morning if you have never done so. This is the only way to find rest for your soul. If you have some struggle that you need help with, while we are certainly imperfect, we have as our goal to help you with a spirit of gentleness. We are very aware of our faults and shortcomings and know that none of us deserve the mercy and grace that we receive from God. We just want to have the opportunity to help you in your spiritual walk, knowing that someday we will need you to be there for us when we are struggling. If your soul is afflicted with something, let it out and let us help you with it this morning. Whatever need you have at this time, please come as we stand and sing together.